much. I have two questions, and because we're not often privileged to have the minister with us, I'd really appreciate his views as well. No disrespect to the presenter, obviously, but you know we don't have the minister very often. The first question is on the interventions that have been spelled out in this fairly detailed report to bring down road fatalities. And there is a number of slides which talk about bringing in people, one officer, one drunkard a month, or something like that. There is talk of honing in and looking at some of these road testing stations and vehicle licensing departments, which are fraudulent, which add to the number of unroadworthy vehicles on our roads, etc., etc. Now, what I'm not quite picking up is, has the department, through various measures, increased the number of staff or taken on additional resources to do this, in which case we now are in a position to make these interventions and conduct these sting operations? It wasn't quite the phrase that was used, but it was somewhere along those lines. Or is it simply a reprioritization of existing people and diverting them from other work that they normally do to give further emphasis to this particular crackdown? Because I think it's important to know the difference in the sense that the fraud at the vehicle testing stations and the vehicle licensing in particular, the drunkenness on a road is not a new phenomenon. It's been around for a very long time. And as much as one welcomes these particular interventions, which we do, it does beg the question why it hasn't been done before and why we're able to do it now. So I'd like to think this is a good news story, but I'd like some details to actually understand how it is we're doing it now and perhaps why it wasn't able to be done before. Then my second question, Chair, is about the variances in performance between the provinces with respect to getting the road fatalities under control. And you will know, Chairperson, and you mentioned this a couple of portfolio meetings yourself. We don't play party politics in this committee. We try to put the interests of the country in transport first. So I'm really not trying to score points here. But in this presentation itself, there is reference to the declining number of fatalities in the Western Cape. And the Safely Home program there is quite well known now. It has had the effect of reducing over the longer term fatalities by 28%, 31% in the last few months, and I think 33% year on year on February. So clearly that program is working, and anybody who lives and works in the Western Cape will know you don't take a chance and you don't drive when you're intoxicated. There is a very well developed and highly publicized system that makes it very likely that you will be caught, and when people do get caught, including prominent people, it seems to appear on the news, and that reminds everybody, I'm not going to take a chance. So that works. Likewise, cell phone use when you're in the car. Very few people do it here, or they take a chance in most other provinces, simply because the likelihood of being caught is very high, and it's well known. It seems to extend beyond Cape Town. I've caused to drive to the far northern Cape a few times in the last couple of months, and whether you're in Canwillim or Citrusdal or Van Rensdorp, you always see, there's always visible road traffic officers, and you don't speed and you don't use your cell phone because you know you're going to get caught. And that would seem to me be part of education and enforcement principles that form part of the four main reasons why this campaign is a success. And I think every one of us here on this committee wants this entire country to succeed. We're all patriots. And we would like to see programs that are successful regardless of where they emanate from or which party might have been in power. That's quite irrelevant. What we want to actually do is bring down the fatalities. And therefore my question to the Minister and to our presenter is, doesn't seem to me that this program, Safely Home, is rocket science. It just reinforces things like enforcement, education, engineering, evaluation that should be relatively easy to roll out in every province. Is there therefore a multi-party approach where one looks at this and says, yeah, these things can work elsewhere. It's easily transferable to other provinces. doing the same kind of things and whether they might expect to get the same kind of success, so that if we could get fatalities down by 30% nationally, I think everybody would say, fantastic, that's a move in the right direction. But is that actually happening?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Minister and Deputy Minister for attending today. I always think that our two ministers have got some of the best tone when they speak. I always feel like they take us into their confidence, and they've got this good tone, and I hope they won't take it personally when we point out the problems, because that's our job, and sometimes it's ouch, but we have to do that sort of thing. Chairperson, I have basically three questions. The table with the statistics, the year and the fatalities, the pages don't have numbers. It says there that it should be noted that these figures are preliminary. Now, I don't know whether that applies only to 2012, but you know, we've got figures 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, etc. Surely by now these are no longer preliminary. They should be final. And if they're final, I've made mention in my budget speech to this report by the Medical Research Council, which doesn't agree with the RTMC's figures by quite a lot. They say that the figure in, and it's on page 58 of the report, should be 17,103 road deaths for 2009, and the RTMC figure is 13,768 for 2009. That's 3,335 people whose remains have ended up in the morgue, according to this report, and yet the figures we have from the RTMC still show 13,000. Now, I understand that the RTMC bases their figures on the police statistics, but this is based on the mortuary statistics, not the police statistics. So there's a difference. The police report, and then we look at what the mortuaries say, and it's not the same. The statistics that are supplied by the RTMC, or the police, if you like, are not final. There's 3,000 people missing from the so-called final figure, and if the Minister could explain why there's that difference, the NIMS, National Institute of Mortality or whatever studies also show a difference in the figures. Secondly, the role of alcohol has been spoken about, and we can't use the breathalyzer to test for alcohol. We have to use a blood test, and the police can only decide who to test for drunk driving. You've got to take the person to a police station. But it's taking a year to get blood results, and you can't keep that person in a cell for a year. You know, you've got to take blood and then release them. And to wait a whole year to get the blood result, that person might be drunk driving every weekend. There's a problem there that we have to deal with. There's a case that I'm aware of Mr. Mfati. He's been arrested 7 times for drunk driving, and he's never appeared in court yet because the blood results just take too long. The last time he was arrested in Riversdale, in the Western Cape, and he was told to come back in a year when they've got the blood results. This is one of these Ferrari driving people who drive crazy fast, and just now he's going to kill somebody. He's already been in hospital once for a car accident. He's an example of a driver that drives recklessly, who is drunk regularly. 7 times arrested for drunk driving, still hasn't been prosecuted, still hasn't been in court. To wait a whole year for the blood results, we've got to find a better way. That's not working. I note that also something I raised in my speech is here, thank you, the National Traffic Anti-Corruption Unit. There's a full report here, but I think that's a good report. But I have a question about it, Chairperson. Total arrests, we're talking about 26,152, if that's what was mentioned. But I'm not sure if those figures are right. Mr. Litswala can perhaps explain how many vehicles are out there that you need to find, because 26 examiners were arrested, 152 traced and suspended, but I thought he said 26,000 wanted vehicles. That just looks like the two previous lines that have been combined into that line. It can't be the exact number. But anyway, my question is about the number of vehicles that have got false or but I'm told that the Minister of Justice issued a memorandum preventing us from naming and shaming convicted drunk drivers. He issued a circular recently. And have we got a copy of that circular? What are we going to do about that if we can't name and shame anymore? The Minister of Justice's memorandum, how does that affect us? And if I may be permitted, just one more chairperson and then I'll end. The RTMC has essentially admitted to the board that they don't have the resources to do forensic management of serious accidents. That means managing lab work of blood tests, managing the forensic inspections of sites and so on. And that was one of the reasons leading to the shareholders voting to shut down the RTMC and transfer it, or transfer its power somewhere else, or make another plan. And I'm wondering why we're still budgeting for this year and perhaps even next year for the RTMCs to continue in its current form when it has admitted that it can't handle all of the required responsibilities which it has. Are we just trying to keep the RTMC alive to be used in the Gauteng e-toll, or why are we keeping it going? Should we not be transferring the powers of the RTMC to the 9 provinces to run road safety campaigns, traffic police, and so on, if the resources and the ability of the RTMC can't do that forensic work? Thanks, Chairperson.
Uyazi njengale program chair ukuthi le program nasi sebenza nawo wonke ama provinces and yini indlela esiyenza ukuthi wonke ama provinces asebenzise le program. Sinezi meetings nabo ama provinces and bayaza kuma meetings kasibabisa kamanye amazinga kunomntu nomntu kuprovince enye nenye otraya ukuimplementa le program le. And kuma provinces na basebenza nomasipala and siyakwazi ukubona ukuthi nyani basebenza nomasipala, nanti indlela ibonisayo ukuthi bayasebenza nomasipala and omasipale bayi-implementa le program. And omasipale ingabanengxaki, siyakwazi nathi na apha e-national ukuthi siyobancedisa omasipale abanengxaki. Ndiyabulela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues to appreciate the presence of the Minister in this meeting and also appreciate the presentation by RTMC. Honorable Chairperson, I think the RTMC has improved a lot from where we started with in this term and is doing its job. Is really commendable. There's no doubt about that. And also, it's improving on a day-to-day basis. There's no question about that. Chairperson, we need to support the RTMC, Honorable Minister, with whatever resources that is needed for it to continue doing the good job that it's doing. I have only 2 questions for the RTMC. The acting CEO said import cars that are hitting our roads are borders, I think there should be something that is doing to make sure that before that a vehicle is utilized, it must be sent straight to the South African Bureau of Standards for approval or whatever. So in provinces, especially in Mpumalanga, where we have the high rate of accidents, I agree with this report because I'm from Mpumalanga and I know it's because that province is between two borders of two countries, is Swaziland and Mozambique. And most of these people who are causing accidents on our roads, who are driving recklessly on our roads, are those people who work in the mines. Rustenburg, your Free State, your Northwest, some are from Gauteng, with these registration numbers. And some of the vehicles, you can see for yourself, Chairperson, that this vehicle is not roadworthy. Then you ask yourself, how did this person drive this car, maybe from Free State to the border of Mozambique or Swaziland? I think the RTMCs must make sure that, should make sure that they trace if this registration or licenses are given correctly, are given as expected, or those vehicles are being tested, or maybe these vehicles are amongst those who are being traced, who received their licenses fraudulently. I really appreciate if those some of these vehicles amongst those, because what is happening, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, is that if you drive, I happen to be on the road almost my weekends. I spend my weekends on the N4 because I have to drive from home to Nelspruit to do my work there. Then it's so scary. It's so scary to drive around, especially in the evenings. It's so scary to drive around this time because these people will come to this garage and park and wait for the traffic officers to knock off. Then they hit the road. What the CEO is saying is true. It's what is happening. Even the trucks, they will park the whole day. They will be at the garage somewhere. They will wait until the officials are no longer on the road. Then they hit the road. And you can see they are driving. It's so scary to be in this road. So if RTMC, with all the interventions that you are proposing, can implement them, then we will be happy. People in Mpumalanga will be more safe. And also along the villages, we have these national roads that drive across villages. These people, when they are rushing to the border, especially on the Swaziland border, around 10 to 6, they are flying. They are not driving. They are flying. And when they hit a person, that person will be in pieces. That is what is happening almost every day. The road, Deputy Minister, from Malalane to Mananga border gate, that driver crossed Gamsu from Zizi, Mangweni, Donga, and Masibekela. Each and every day on that road, a person is killed. And there are schools across the road. School children are being hit by the road, by the cars, every day, each and every day. There are accidents that is happening. So maybe if also speed humps could be constructed along those roads, then that will be appreciated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the presentation. Except to say that I think the pictures are not included in the document. They are conspicuous. So maybe there's a virus that is the pictures to members. So
in the country, so that we update, especially when you talk of provinces, as you might know, and everybody knows that some of our provinces are more rural, and I would wish the document would put an emphasis in that regard on rural roads, on those roads that are linked to provinces and some to municipalities, because of the fatalities that are concerned. And maybe it takes me to another seeking clarity question on the consultative approach with your sister departments to play their role, especially when we talk of infrastructure development. To what extent is that problem of the infrastructure development in as far as roads is concerned with our provinces is realized? Because we find that some provinces are very slow. In fact, you know, Chairperson, I normally say you move from the known to unknown. Because I would think that we would say this financial year, as we not do all roads, but surely there are those critical roads which we've made an assessment, where there's high road, high accident fatalities. So say we'll start with these roads on this kilometer stretch, and then in the next financial year, we'll move to another one, having done those that are very bad, but it seems to me we just cross over them, and even provinces, when they give reports to yourselves, they just say we've done this without really, and some of them might be hiding behind SANRAL, because SANRAL, in terms of the national roads, they are doing quite a job, it's feasible. We'll travel those roads. But there are those roads that are not brought to the fore by our counterparts. The monitoring mechanism to say really it was value, it was money, what do you call it, value for money for what we've given them. Do you have that kind of a system? So that it is not a repetition of all the time that we've given them money, but we still don't see the output to improve the road network. You know, so I'm just trying to check whether we have to do that. The question of the capacity, because I know in one page on the NTACU, you've got four staff members. Is that enough for the entire country? Or what does your organogram say? And have you quantified that by how much would you need at least to be comfortable with those people? Because you see, if you overload a person with a lot of work, surely that person's stress level will creep in, and those stress levels will result into diabetic and other opportunity diseases, and very soon you'll say that person is not performing because he's overburdened. I hope it's not the situation with yourselves also if you're sitting there. Can I just check that on these four staff members that you are talking about? The reality is that, Chairperson, I'm talking this from experience. You know, there was a principal who was overloaded and he collapsed. And in a memorial service, the government was left very, serious, because this person had to be an administrator, had to be a postman, had to manage teachers who are not cooperating, and everything else went into the poor principal. He must look at the results. And so he could not take it anymore. And when he passed on, government was left by the unions. We are an uncaring society. So it must have also been them themselves, going forward. Before people, I just want to check with them. My last issue, Chairperson, was I wonder, in improving our vehicles, Chair, because we must talk also about the condition, the state of our vehicles. You talk of tiredness and so on. So I was just thinking, I'm just thinking aloud that there is a particular carbon, it's nitrogen, that is normally inflated in tires to keep with the temperatures and so on, or the cut road to the texture, rather than put the normal pressure on tires. What pressure does the car take? 2 bars or 3 bars or whatever, with the normal pressure. But there's a particular pressure, I think you pay about 45 rand a tire for that nitrogen to stabilize your car, so that it reduces the question of tire mass. Can't really come on to that, because it's very helpful, so that I'm not talking of retread tires document, let alone the what you call the fear. You see, when a car overspeeds, just like in trucks, normally says they must drive the maximum is 80 kilometers per hour. Ours is 120, the normal cars, the vehicles. Once you exceed that 80, your accelerator cuts off, so that you remain within the ambit of the law, 80, if it's a truck. Can't we talk to the automotive industry to check whether, I know cars are going up to 260, 280, but the national speed limit on our roads is 120. Once you reach the 120, and you want to go for 140, it can give you that allowance, but you can't go to over 140 to 160. It cuts. There should be a device that cuts off your car so that you reduce the speed and remain within the ambit of the law. Can't you be so creative? It's like the sensors in these cars today. If you reverse, it tells you if you go forward and you are going to hit something. It also does have a sensor. I think we need to modernize. Even if it's 80% of the vehicles on the road, it can't be just now it's new, then you can go. There should be some obligatory devices that are installed in cars. There's a program, Chairperson, which I think you is still going to run, I hope, learners to be trained from school, especially from grade 11. There's a competition, I saw the documents of the competition, the debating and so on. But also the practical experience of driving of those learners from grade 11 to grade 12, so that when they go out of the system at grade 12, they do have a proper driving license, of which you want to see what type of driving, as you are going to review. I know you now, I'm coming from the PDP side, and you have improved, changed the technology from PDP to... Now we want to move also from this one that is there to another one, as we are saying to this document. So can't we, how far are we in introducing that? Chair, my last one, I will die if I cannot talk about the scholar transport. The matter of scholar transport. Policy is being developed. I'm not yet there. But can we talk about the transport of the vehicle itself? What design, type of a... transport are we having in mind to be designed for scholars to be ferried from home to school and back? Even if it's not yet there, because I know there will be some specs and so on, the bidding with the manufacturing companies, but do we have an idea of what type of transport, what the reality of the matter? In rural areas, buggies are being used, and they are still going to be used if there is a space. And tractors, they are still going to be used to ferry our learners if government is not moving swiftly. I know this matter has been coming since 1991, so you can think of that. Since 1997 or 96, it has been coming this thing of devising to no fruition. Is there a thinking, real serious thinking, so that people, our learners are much more safe, so that you don't just react and then say, no, we are sorry, but you cannot have traffic officers all over the car to show, especially in rural areas. That's why we cannot see to it that our learners are transported properly. And yes, taxis themselves, the quantums are not safe. When they hit, they normally burst, because it is that their petrol tanks, it has got a defect. It's easy to explode, the quantums. Now, also those quantums are not willing to go to those roads to ferry our people, because they are not subsidized. Or if they are subsidized, money is too little. I'm talking of safety of our kids, of our learners. Where do we stand, you know, so that we speak with one voice on these matters. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. How then those challenges are responded to. So that we discuss this matter within a particular context. And if Honorable Minister, you want to get deeper into this, I wouldn't mind giving you another day to come back to the Portfolio Committee, take us through the condition that gave birth to the RTMC and the progress that has been made and the impact and challenges that have contributed to where we are and how we then, how you seek to address those challenges so that when we discuss this issue, we all apply our minds to the situation that we seek to address as opposed to policy positions of different political parties serving in this portfolio committee. That would be the first issue. The second issue that I would want to raise is related to the major road accidents that have taken place during this term of this fourth parliament, particularly those that involved school children. And the accident reconstruction report of those major accidents and how they then relate to the scholar transport policy as well as the infrastructure development of the country and programs that would then that are presented here to see how the programs that are being proposed relate to those major accidents. Just to mention a few. A major accident happened here in the Western Cape at a level crossing where I think about 14 school children died. Another major accident happened last year involving a school bus and a minibus where the principal of the school died. Another major accident happened in KwaZulu-Natal, Bulwa, which was not a kind of a vehicle designed to carry children. It was a goods van. Another one happened in KwaZulu-Natal again, carrying school children who were from the area of Umzinto going to sports event. 2 weeks after that, another accident of the same nature happened. Then there's another major accident that did not involve school children, which happened in Free State. A minibus was carrying 35 people from Rustenburg. And another major accident happened at a level crossing in Pumala, where farm workers came out prominently out of that accident. It is the type of a vehicle that was used. Question that I'm coming to, are the laws governing the type of the vehicle that is designed to use designed to transport people, because we continue to see tractors used to transport farm workers, and how this program that has been presented here, the intervention program, relates to that. How many accidents have happened that are involving farm workers, and how are we responding to that in terms of law enforcement as well as in terms of law enforcement and programs that are then related to taking on board farm workers who are actually the people that are farm workers in those types of sites. I will then ask the Minister to respond.
Honorable Chairperson, I thank you for the opportunity. But the opportunity I will not take is the one I'm sure you are referring to your colleagues, where you invited them to take off their gloves. But I would say that the questions posed by members, it's good that they are pertinent questions. What we cannot allow and what we should not allow is for the portfolio committee to become a multi-party session of mutual back scratching. We'd be remiss in our responsibility if we did so. The nature of the questions from all members are such that they indicate the requisite seriousness to assist us in our national responsibility to deal with the issues that they've raised. So we take and expect questions to be of that nature. I would like to perhaps respond to a few comments, questions made by members, and then afford the Deputy Minister a chance to do likewise, and I'm sure that the presenter, Mr. Litswalo, would also have the opportunity with his team to provide further information. that has been an ongoing process where in the various branches, yesterday the Deputy Minister chaired what we call a strategic management committee the entire day. We seek to have those meetings at least twice a month, and that brings together under one roof all the deputy directors of the department, and then we are able to look at challenges, failures, problems within the various branches and ways and means of mitigating those. So I can safely say that the department, in conjunction with the entity that's giving this report, we are synergizing the numbers of warm bodies that are needed in order to give expression to the responsibility that they do have. So I would ask Mr. Sabisa to, at the later stage, to tell you exactly how many staff members they have in this particular branch that works with the RTMC. You also, Honorable Member, raised a very important issue, the reality that there are variances in the performances of various provinces. That can only be true because of the function of the composition of the various provinces. Gauteng, the Western Cape, they are more urban with semi-urban rural areas. But then you find we have provinces that are predominantly rural. If you look at your Eastern Cape and then others. So the level of performance cannot be the same because of the structural makeup and the rate of development in the various provinces. But the issue that you raise is an important one. You speak to the importance of us utilizing best practice throughout the country. You also asked the direct question whether there was a multi-party approach in regard to this, without party politicking in regard to how do we utilize best practice. My very short answer to you would be that we have a national structure that's called the MINMEC, which is a structure that's attended by the ministry in conjunction with the 9 provinces. So I would like to assure honorable members that at that level, what we seek to foreground is the utilization of best practice. A case in point is that whilst the Eastern Cape, as I said a few seconds earlier, is a predominantly rural province, but a year ago when we visited the province, they had a program that was in place where the private sector with a number of schools ran a driver learner program from high school level to tertiary university level. They were in touch with various schools and sponsored a number of the rural schools for pupils, learners, to be able to get their learners driver's licenses and thereafter driver's licenses. So in that particular instance, that issue was raised at MINMEC and said that we should seek to replicate that type of best practice. The issues that you make mention with regard to the Western Cape, we work very closely with MEC Carlisle, and we have sought to encourage, and we are looking at means of not just encouraging, but utilizing best practice. There are measures in place in the Western Cape that pertain to stricter fines for people who drive whilst utilizing cell phones. You also mentioned the naming and shaming and other measures. So I really would like to put your mind at rest in regard to that we do encourage best practice and we do not feel shy to feature or a program of best practice in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. It's our responsibility to use those measures for us to be able to advance. There are a number of points that Honorable Hollis raised. One of those was the issues around NIMS, the issues about the stats to be found in mortuaries, the stats found by one or two private institutions who also track fatalities on our roads. I would like to give the opportunity, when he does speak, to Mr. Lizwalo to speak to why it is that the agency utilizes the stats produced by the South African Police Services and what are the shortfalls, for instance, of some of the figures produced by independent agencies. Information would be for 6 months or 3 months, but not for the entire period. So I would just like him to foreground those issues, so that at the end of the process, we are able to foreground if there are positive elements to be learned from the NIMS process, also to be able to use it, utilize it with the South African Police Services methods. So where there are weaknesses in both systems, we need to foreground those in order to synergize a better approach that's almost like belts and braces, where nothing falls in between, but we're able to utilize the information available as best as possible. The very important issue was also raised by Mr. Hollis, and that's with regard to the time lapse that it takes for people to be tested, the blood, and then the samples, the extensive period that blood samples linger in testing facilities. In certain instances, as pointed out, for more than a year. But I would like to share the following information with the portfolio committee. In regard to this, it's a matter that we are working in conjunction with the Department of Health. And the Department of Health, Dr. Minister Aaron Ntswaledi, functions, roles and responsibility of the department and those of the nine provinces. I would like to say that indeed, as I mentioned some moments earlier, when we meet at the level of the ministry and with the various MECs from our nine provinces, we do indeed work together in order to enhance the synergy that presently exists. This is why there is no national program of the Department of Transport that does not have the input and contribution of the various provinces. You would also recall that we have had a number of provinces towards the end of last year. We had a major program in the Western Cape where we went to the Joe Garvey Testing Center, and we also encouraged the best practice that was to be found at that testing center to articulate and motivate that other provinces utilize that, where they test buses, combis, and sedans, private sedans, prior to the festive season, free of charge, and they articulate exactly what the issues are on a car, and when they are brought back, and when they pass the various tests, they give the requisite paperwork. Then after that, we have visited most of our provinces and run joint provinces, joint programs rather, with all the provinces. So I can say with confidence that we are engaging all our provinces, and we've had programs and projects with our provinces, and we seek to continue rotating ourselves with the activities of the respective provinces. The issue was mentioned about imported cars that don't follow South African Bureau of Standards. With our colleagues, I could only assure you that we will continue to ensure that the Department of Trade and Industry ensures that the law in this regard is followed to the letter. Then if I may, to take a very short detour without making that the journey, I would like to say that in our engagement with stakeholders, bus operators and bus manufacturers, and also people in the minibus taxi industry, they've come forward and pointed out to us in regard to the issue of South African Bureau of Standards, we need to be more vigilant and mindful and check that even the buses that are imported into the country follow the requisite norms and standards in South Africa. And even where they are assembled within the country, we should ensure that when you check double-decker buses, they should not have more than the requisite number of seats. So there are a number of issues that they pointed out and said that in the industry, in the area of operation, they've seen some anomalies in the buses or the vehicles operated by their colleagues. So that points to a situation where there's a degree of trust and confidence so that everyone would seek to comply with the rules of the country. But we remain vigilant in that regard to ensure that norms and standards are indeed followed. Then Honorable Suka, amongst the other issues that he raised, was the question of testing standards across testing grounds in the country. So that's also an issue that we are looking at. And I did say that we will continue visiting a number of testing grounds in various provinces to see for ourselves exactly what the state of play at those testing grounds. As I said, we commenced that particular journey with visiting the Joe Garvey testing ground in the Western Cape, and we will be visiting others to ensure that there is a uniform standard so that people are held accountable. Then you also made mention of the issue memory in regard to how the RTMC was formed, the progress that it has made, and the challenges that it faces. I'm sure that honorable members could, in one other session of the portfolio committee, engage in that issue, and we remind each other. I must just say, in all fairness, we also need to be mindful that not all of us have been members of the portfolio committee for the past 15 or 18 years like yourself, so you also have to be tolerant. Others might not have the institutional memory that you have, but it's our responsibility to share the information as to the road traversed with the RTMC, where it comes from, challenges, so that we can all engage in the discussion with the benefit of all the relevant information. Chairperson, you also spoke to the issue of major road fatalities, and you highlighted the number of instances where scholar transport was involved and the mode of scholar transport which is not the requisite mode. You spoke about children being conveyed in tractors, others being conveyed in vans and other forms of transport. I might just say in regard to that issue, it's an issue that we will have to discuss. My little knowledge, in having visited a number of other countries, in most countries in Europe that I've come across, it's illegal to transport any human being in a van. Human beings are in the front cab, but at the back of any van, you would not find any human being there. There are reasons for that. So I would think that it's an issue that we need to look at if we are going to address that particular problem. One van involved in an accident, it's 18 or 20 children injured or killed. So it's an issue that we cannot run away. We have to face it and say, what are we going to do in regard to the South African flood? Chairperson, I think I've earned a little of my living this morning. So I would avail the opportunity to the Deputy Minister to do likewise, to defend the SLS. And then we'll pass over to Mr. Colin Letswana. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, Minister. And I think the Minister has responded to quite a number of questions. I just wanted to add something on person license, to say when the court decided that this cannot be used in court as reliable source of information in as far as the level of blood alcohol or alcohol in the blood. It indeed is an aspect. It was indeed a setback for us as a department, because the taking of blood in by itself is a very cumbersome process. I'm not talking about the results. What it actually means is that the traffic officer must leave the road and accompany you to the hospital. And as per the information that was presented here, it will be during the night, most often than not. And what it means is that he's taking this person to casualty, where the medical staff or the health professionals are actually attending to emergency. So they will have to identify and see this person as an emergency. As a matter of fact, for them, an emergency is something else, not just a drunk person. And that is a problem. So you find that they are busy in casualty, attending to people who must be rushed to theater, who must be resuscitated and so on. And this person is sitting there. By the time they are ready to take blood, the blood level is low. And the person can actually argue in court to say this was that and so on. So I'm actually saying it is indeed a problem for us. If it was according to us, over and above what we are doing with the Department of Health, was probably to get yet another reliable equipment similar to the breathalyzer, but more reliable, and that can actually be used in a court of law and be accepted as producing the reliable results. And I think there are lessons to learn from other countries, which I think we can bring to ourselves. Otherwise, it remains a problem. It shouldn't take long to get results, because I don't believe it. In fact, it shouldn't. But the fact of the matter is that they're taken elsewhere, not at a hospital laboratory. But even there as a laboratory, they would definitely not be regarded as priority. They would be rushing other, I mean, samples to analyze and give results, because somebody, the doctor, is waiting for the results for him to know what to do. So I'm just explaining the reality of situations and the fact that it is indeed a problem for us as the Department of Transport. But the rollout of ARTO with demerit points probably might be a solution to some of the problems. It will not completely address some of the problems, because you're still going to arrest a person who is drunk. But I think in a way it will assist us, and the intention is that this be done at the end towards the end of this year. We're coming to speed humps, as raised by Honourable Doris. I think also we are encouraging road safety councils in our areas to identify these areas and speak to local municipalities for the speed humps to be erected, to be constructed, so that we don't wait for, because probably it will be far for the national department to come down to the level. But otherwise, where it's not happening, we are more than prepared to assist and go to the municipalities, to provinces, to say, but there is a report here that people are dying every day. I must indicate that in some of the areas, like if you're driving along the roads in Limpopo, where I was at some stage, you can actually see as to why there are many accidents on a particular point. It will be a tavern, the site, and the community center. So you can actually see that they cross the road to tavern, and after that, when they're going back, being drunk, walking to their houses, then, of course, accidents occur. They're knocked down by cars. So these are other issues that we think we need to look into as a department, but also with other people assisting us, those that are issuing a liquor license, to say, but it's important that we check at the location of the tavern in relation to particularly our busy roads. I think the minister has spoken to the issues related to corruption at the testing stations. But probably one would want to add that we also are considering bringing in intelligence strategies. You know, we have intelligence in South Africa, but we also have even crime intelligence. To say you go in there, somebody gets information, you pay, then you arrest. Using those strategies, I think it can also assist. And talking to our counterparts, the police, to say not only the hawks, but even crime intelligence, so that we probably allocate time to say we just are targeting this, using everything at our disposal, probably it can send a message. And with regards to the staff department deciding to increase the staff, it's better that we discuss it yesterday. To say you have smaller municipalities that will have just 3 traffic officers, and they have to look, in fact, police, and a wide area that falls under that municipality. So it's just not adequate enough. And the very fact that they would work from morning until evening, and after that there is nobody and they are at home. These are issues that we are indeed looking into, including checking whether we should not declare this as an essential service. And we actually are aware of the fact that at some stage they were being paid for overtime. And that has been withdrawn now. And I think it will be important, we're saying yesterday in the meeting, as the minister was saying, that it will be important for us to compare in terms of money what it means to pay overtime vis-a-vis a person dying because there's nobody. And how much do we pay for when a person is knocked down by a car and goes to the hospital, admitted in an ICU for 3 weeks, then having a traffic officer working overtime for now, or probably in considering even increasing the numbers going forward. I think these are the things that we're looking into. And therefore, I can assure members, as the Minister has said, that we're taking this matter very seriously, the issue and the matter regarding road accidents and fatalities on our roads. And indeed, we are inviting members of the portfolio committee to sometimes join our operations and see for yourself. It's our to believe that some of you will, but we are inviting you to see for yourself what is happening on the road. The abuse of alcohol in South Africa is seen on the road. It is. It's a reality. People drink, and they drink and get into the road. We were in a match with the minister, where was it in, I think it was in Gauteng, and there were so many traffic officers, but there was a driver drunk, knocking down somebody or another car in front of the traffic officer, drunk in the early hours of the morning. So alcohol abuse is just not a myth or a story, it's a reality, and the consequences of that are what we are talking about here in the town. I thank you, Chair.
Chair, just a minor two additions. The Deputy Minister, when she speaks about laboratory and what happens at hospitals, I must just share with the House that she knows that particular area very well, being a sister tutor by profession. So she knows the nursing profession very well. But the other issue that I wanted to raise in my earlier contribution, which I did not raise, which Mr. Litswalo has raised at different occasions, is the reality that I speak under correction what I'm about to say, is the reality that out of our 9 provinces, the majority of them, if not 8 or 7, there are no traffic officers on our roads on duty between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. But in the Western Cape, they are those officers on duty. So it does make a difference. So that's another issue that we have discussed and said we need to address the issue. We do need to have people on duty during those hours throughout the country if we are going to bring our figures down and the policing aspect. Chair, thank you. I think it's time for Collins to end his living now.
Thanks, Nia. One of the issues around the bad practice in different provinces is discussed at a forum called the Road Traffic Management Coordinating Committee that we chair, and all provinces sit there. There are also provincial ones that are chaired by the person that is in a mortuary, SAPS does that. We confirm that with Home Affairs because they issue out a death certificate. So we take all those things we put together. In 2010, when we started, South Africa was working on 7 days, meaning if you get injured today and you die within 7 days, we are counting you. All over the world, they were using 30 days. In 2011, we have moved to now use 30 days. So that's what we do. We work with them. As I'm telling you, on Thursday is the cut-off date for all the information that is coming from South African Police Service to come to us to confirm the figure that we have already shown as a preliminary figure of 12,221. So that's the methodology. The methodologies are different. The extrapolation, then we work with those people. We work with Mohammed Sidat from UNISA. We work with the people of the MRC. So it's a work in progress that we are working towards. To give you comfort, we are also a member of the International Road Traffic and Data Analysis Group, IRTA. We sit in Paris, we discuss all these issues and how trends change and all those things, and we get new methodologies. So it is not a matter, this is a science. We sit down, we do a science, we specifically do that thing. So the difference is the methodology. I hope that is a solved, this mystery about this NIMS. And if I'm telling you now, NIMS only has coverage in Gauteng and Mpumalanga. They do not cover the other 7 provinces. In Gauteng, it specifically excludes Pretoria because the majority in Pretoria do not submit the number. So that's the dynamic of NIMS as we look at it. So if there is any need, we can engage in a bilateral where we can discuss, and I'll show you what the differences are. But we count the physical people that are there. They extrapolate. That's the difference. The issue around the vehicles, I'm told that we have got the vehicles that are wanted are different, and there are a lot of them. But the issue is we have got 10,009 vehicles that we have actually captured in our automatic number plate recognition capability. Those vehicles we know we are looking for in terms of that report that you gave to the minister during the budget vote. We are also told that there's about 30,000 vehicles that are on the APR from the bank side, where people just went AWOL and never paid for those vehicles and never done anything. They literally removed all those vehicles. No one can locate them. So the banks are finding it difficult to get them. Those are one of the vehicles that are being looked for. Most of them are also on roadway. What we can also tell you is that the car park in South Africa shows very clearly that 80% of South African cars are more than 10 years old. And I think that solves the issue around the technology that you can actually implement in those cars. Because if 80% are 10-year-old, it tells you some of them, most of them don't have ABS, they don't have all those necessities that we'd like to have. I think just to add on the issue of the use of alcohol for the on what the Deputy Minister and the Minister have already said, there was a standard that was passed in March 2013, SANS 1793, 2013, which is the standard for a breathalyzer. Because the court had found that there are certain things about the current standard of the breathalyzer, we had to change those standards, and now we have set those standards. And most of the breathalyzers are now coming in line with that. We are working with the prosecution to ensure that we are setting up the standard on how, when you arrest the person, you do. One of the issues of that we are facing that will never be resolved by the breathalyzer is the confidence of our officers in front of defense advocates. That's the thing that we need to work on. But also, there are issues around how people write a statement. There is a statement of the arresting officer that gets into the thing sometimes, you know, that he's not returning the way that he should. And I think the other thing that we are now introducing is a thing called an operator statement. Someone who has
go to the initial, push it up, and then the person does that. So those are the things that we are working to ensure that we bring back the breathalyzer, because we agree with you. There is no way we are going to pick up the number of people that we want to arrest on alcohol abuse if we are not going to move with the breathalyzer, as it were. The name and shame by the Minister of Justice. We have got an MOU. I would not know about that memorandum that he has issued about naming and shaming. But at the RCMC, we have got a MOU with the Department of Justice about naming and shaming. They have agreed to even give us the names, and we are going to be doing this together with them. In the same light that they did on Sunday, where they released the number of people that have been defrauded in the state, we will be doing the very same thing with them. So I would not know about that. I'm not even aware of it. I would not want to delve in the issue of the closure of the RTMC. It would be a tricky voting for Christmas, so I would not want to go that way. Municipalities have got capacity challenges, and we agree that there are capacity challenges in municipalities. Where possible, we are trying to assist them. In fact, we have set aside a certain budget for municipalities to assist. One of the things that we are doing now is distribution of breathalyzers in all authorities. Yeah, we are distributing about 1,000 breathalyzers, so that at least every car that you see on the road with a traffic officer in it should have a breathalyzer. So that's our thing. Is that even if you are a teen toddler, you and myself, you are going to be tested. So that gives you the comfort that there's no one who's going to just be taken into the cell simply because we are saying we must arrest. So breathalyzers are used. How we get to test to take someone to a hospital for the blood to be drawn is that we use a breathalyzer. Then we take you there. What is a problem is the evidentia, which is the bigger machine that you go and blow into that produces the report that goes to court. So that is what is. But we are still using the breathalyzers on the roadside. The new car assessment program. There are two aspects of the vehicles and their roadworthiness that we are looking at. One, they try to improve the current size of the vehicles that we have. We know very well that most of our vehicles have been tested only once. That is when they were bought or when they changed ownership. Now we are saying we are bringing what we call periodic vehicle testing to allow the vehicles to be tested. The initial aim was to say any car above 10 years must now be tested every year. What that will create is a problem of a bottleneck because we do not have enough capacity to be able to carry that. So we are trying to phase it in, and we hope that probably by 2015 they will start to go on a regular basis to be tested. But that will depend, one, on the age of the car. Second, it will also be based on the kilometers of the car, because the fact that the car is 10 years old, it might have driven 20,000. The other one might be 2 years old and have been driven 300 kilometers. So those are the things that we are working on to ensure that that happens. And of course, we are introducing in the road area, we have got a South African road assessment program. In the car area, we are going to have what we call a new car assessment program. So we are going to evaluate our cars and rate them accordingly as well. The issue around the major accidents and how they impact on the programs and standards that are used to ferry people, we agree with that. The intervention programs, we agree with that. But the issue around how we weigh these things, and I mean, it's a bad thing to do, but when you've got resources constrained, what you deal with is the 80-20 principle. The issue is that 80% of our accidents happen on national and provincial roads. The ones that kill our people. Incidentally, those are some of our best roads. And when you take it back, it also tells you the
going to go to each and every one of those GLTCs and see the people they service. We want to see the numbers they service. We want to see how they queue. We want to see all those things so that we can come with a model that helps us to deal with that thing. So we are trying to develop what we call a customer-centric way of looking at how we service our people in those centers. Because some of the centers, it's not because they are corrupt, it's not because of anything, it's because the numbers are too much for the people that are there. So we are trying to get that and get a balance around and see what we can do. Some of the things is seeing whether we can go to our people and actually provide that service there with mobile centers like it has been done by Home Affairs. So those are the things that we are working on that we could not actually show you here because they are not programmed yet. We are still working on them. I hope that I've addressed all the issues.
Any other person who will be there. I just want to say that when that happens, the cause of death is an unnatural cause of death. And there are so many unnatural causes of death. If I die from burns, it's a natural cause. If the cause is not clear, it's a natural cause. So many people will refer to unnatural causes of death as probably amounting to, because there's an injury, an accident. It might be anything, but not a motor vehicle accident. So I'm just explaining that what makes SAPS more information more reliable is that they will also be present during the post-mortem at the hospital with the file of the patient, written motor vehicle accident, fractured femur in the history that is taken when the person is admitted, whether unknown or known. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think the minister has dealt with the issue around that, because what the issue is at the end of the day, the police are involved. When someone dies on the road, even within the next 30 days, that's still culpable homicide, which they count on their side. So someone who gets injured, who dies, it becomes culpable homicide, and it continues to be investigated. So as I'm saying, I'm still sticking with what I have. They are extrapolating. We are counting bodies. The number that you are looking for is 10,009 for the vehicles that are out there that we are looking for, that are in that report. It's 10,009 that has been captured in the system and looking for them. How do we do that? There's a thing called automatic number plate recognition capability. So we have got this car that we have, takes a number plate, things it into the system, the database check, this is one of the ones we are looking for, we stop the car, we discontinue the vehicle, or we take it to a pump. That's what we do on those vehicles. How do we do that? The vehicle that we have, it's at roadblocks, and it also at different toll gates. So you would have the toll gate, and then we can pick up that thing. We saw it pass. We will then distribute that number. So anyone who has got ANPR, so on the initials, we have marked those vehicles as vehicles that we are looking for. So that's how we work. The more we work with all the vehicle testing centers, the more we get more people that we must take that we have caught their certificate of roadworthiness in a corrupt manner, and those people will follow that way. So we do that, and then we do. The issue that we have is the closure of those particular testing stations, because others were closed in Gauteng, they were then reopened because of a court order. So those are the things that we're trying to fix as we go along. But just generally, I mean, it's easier to pick up a vehicle. I mean, we've got about 9 million vehicles in South African roads, we are looking for 10,000. So, others are moving in rural roads that are not moving well, our NPR, we are not able to pick them up, but once we do that, we are able to deal with those issues. Thanks.
It's very difficult, very interesting chapter in this matter. You know, in the province, an old man had an old car called Fargo. Whether you know that the old man back to Fargo. So the old man was just driving in the rural area around Mazar. very quiet on the matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, the standard in SADC is around the SADC transport protocol that we have. We do have different meetings. I think the last one was where we discuss some of these issues. What we are finding is that on the driver training side, most of the SADC countries are far ahead of us. On the vehicle side, we are more ahead of them. So those are things that we are working with them on, and then trying to look at areas of collaboration. We have at various times also offered to assist, and they've also offered to assist us, so we are working very closely on those issues. What we have seen, I think, is an area where, in terms of the SADC protocol, Swaziland was supposed to adhere to the protocol. They have not. And as a result, you know there's a big thing about us arresting people from Swaziland for using their driver's license to drive. It's because they are not adhering to the SADC protocol. And therefore the Geneva Convention by extension. I remember you asked a question about South African Road Assessment Program, whether it's done in conjunction with SANRAL and municipalities. Yes, we are doing that. We are doing it with SANRAL. We are doing the technical committee, include those people. But by virtue of that as well, it's just a matter of them understanding it, because we are the referee. They are the player. So they develop the road. We don't expect them to say, my road is one star. So there is a balance that we must have. So that's what we are doing to try and do. The capacity, you asked about also capacity with the National Traffic Anti-Corruption Unit. The capacity that we think we're going to have to grow to is about 15 people. We have got 4 people, but we have moved with speed. Why have we been slow in hiring those people? We are afraid of the contamination factor. So you pick up a person, you have got to take him through the process, check the person through and make sure that he's the right person to get into an anti-corruption unit. Because the chances are if you just go, you can't, this kind of posts are not the ones that you advertise and get people to apply and get in. It's a kind of way where you get people from different authorities and say, yes, this is a guy, he has been working here, this is what he does, and then we get people with the skill in that. We have, through the department, extended the mandate of the consultants that were actually doing work in KZN to assist us in that. So in some other places like Eastern Cape and others, they are actually working with us in that regard. Was there any other question I didn't answer? No. There? For the SOS, I do not remember it working so far. I do not know if anyone knows about it. But the issue is that what we have usually on national roads is people that patrol the road, and then they would have incidents and accidents. There's only a toll-free number as well that people can dial to if they are in trouble. But usually what we have is SANRAL and all the others occupying that. The SOS is no longer with.
Thank you.
Chair, I just needed to add to what Colin said with regard to SADC. I would like the House to know that we are indeed in touch with our counterparts. We have met with my counterpart in Botswana and counterpart in Zimbabwe. And all of them are very keen, as the SADC collective, that we learn from best practice and share best practice. So at the appropriate stage, we'll also share further information with the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the minister, the deputy minister, the Department of Transport, and RTMC. We feel a trip different than what we expected him to present. And also, to you, Minister, you brought with you the entire team to respond to our questions, and we really thank you for that, and we appreciate that kind of a relationship. We also want to point out that our observation in relation to the RTMC turnaround strategy is that we are beginning to see the results, so we are no longer talking about a turnaround strategy which is not yielding any results. We also would like to say that we support the Minister of Transport on the stance taken against alcohol abuse by drivers in this country. We think that it's a correct approach that will contribute in reducing fatal accidents in this country in a very effective manner. We have also observed that the fight against alcohol abuse is also taken up by both the Minister of Health and the Minister of Social Development. And I think that it also indicates a collective working relationship in identifying a problem and also working together to fight that problem. Well, however, concerned, Honorable Minister, by the fact that selling of liquor in casino takes place 24 hours, 7 days a week. A practical example is in Peter Maritzburg. And the Peter Maritzburg casino is very close to the Durban University of Technology as well as the University of KwaZulu-Natal. It affects university students. And I think that it is the issue that needs engagement with the gaming board in terms of what happens in those centers. The other one is the issue of liquor licenses by the municipalities. A practical example again is the areas that are selling liquor in Durban below the flats that are residential areas for students, particularly at Point Road and also in Russell Street, those areas where students at university level, young children who have come out of home for the first time, beginning to stay on their own, but then if licenses for selling liquor are issued recklessly, they then have an impact on young people. I am referring even to an issue that directly affected me. My son went to ML Sultan not drinking. He came home having been introduced because he was staying in a flat above a store that was selling liquor, and it took me a long time to take him to the rehabilitation center because of how accessible liquor was, and he was a first year student under peer pressure. That then, in my view, also needs engagement with SALGA, because those licenses are issued by the municipalities as well as the Department of Trade and Industry if we are to win the fight against alcohol abuse, which then has got an impact on fatal road accidents. Thank you very much. The minister and the team, and then just deal with the minutes as the members of the team. It's just three pages. We are dealing with the minutes of the portfolio committee meeting that set on Tuesday, the 4th of adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mustafa. Can we have the second? Honorable Suka?
I second, Chairperson.